Hello, and welcome to The More You Look, Up Close, a short, unscheduled stop on your behind-the-scenes journey into museum collections, research exhibits, and public programming. In this episode, we continue our episode 14 conversation with members of the Friends of the UA Museum of the North, Always Getting Ready. The Friends are a group of engaged community members whose purpose is to build a bridge of understanding and knowledge about the museum's collections and research. We pick up the discussion with Ron Inouye, Dave Norton, and Tim Doran.
What does the museum need? I look at one is moving beyond survival. As you mentioned, the Museum of the North is part of the University of Alaska. It's an active educational entity. That goes beyond just collecting and holding things. It's making them come alive. It's capturing life in Alaska in the broad range and understanding of life, even for inanimate objects. But what where we really need to get is that investment in public education, investment in the museum, so that the museum can be creative, innovative. There are a ton, literally, of items in storage. How do we get those out? How do we get items, indicators that really help to educate and affirm our population? So I think that is one of the biggest things that I think of is we've been in a lot of public institutions in the state, museum in specific, in a survival mode. How do we make things work with less resources, whether that be funding and or staffing opportunities? How do we open that up? And so what we can do to contribute to the future. And then the other piece is to be able to, again, that innovation, that creativity piece, with all the things in storage, how do we get them out? How do we get them? And it is a thrill to walk into the gallery and see the fishbone dress, to see the variety of whale skulls that are up. You know, little things that are coming in, the staff trying to bring more to the public. As we can grow, we can invest in it, we can have a greater opportunity, whether it is a planetarium, a gallery refreshing, updating information based on new things we've learned and understandings we've gained. So, you know, whether it is doing an addition on, so we can make more things available to the public. So I look at those two things. It's beyond survival. It's really being able to look forward, and that takes an investment.
Yeah. We've gotten very good at putting a lot in a small space. Doesn't mean we couldn't use more space.
Well, and yes, exactly. But also that, you know, how things move along, how do you, you know, exchange special exhibits, trade out some areas so that they are current, they're providing more information. This little gallery that highlights some of the departments, mm-hmm. you know, that's there. But it's being able to think more broadly in how we even use the space we have, in addition to adding.
I always think of the museum as a public demonstration of answering the question, did you know, did you realize, and the great shedding of light on some treasure of understanding.
I think that, you know, in terms of when I think about needs of the Friends, and it's an ongoing conversation when we get together. Yeah. You know, what, as Ron said too, it's that, you know, how do we serve the museum? So part of our needs are, I think, is knowing what the museum needs, and that there's an avenue to say, and whether it's a seed money or a seed project that we can support that will grow into something else. And I think there's that ongoing piece we've had discussions with is membership, you know, and people willing to serve on our board. We need to look at how do we build cross-generationally, and so that we can stay current with things and responsive to situations at the museum and needs of the museum and needs of our community. How do we can be that bridge? How do we do that? When those students come in on a school tour at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, what about when they come back as university students and they're coming here, but then they're working in our community. They're raising their families in our community. How do we continue those connections? And we need that voice at the table, if I'm not speaking out of turn. Since it's editing,
I like the good parts. I like the jokes and when people are laughing. Those are the parts I want to keep.
I'm really glad that this building is as architecturally distinctive as it is. I can think of only other, probably two other buildings in the state that are very prominent, and one is that APU campus. You know, that was done by Stone, who was very, very well known. It's totally dysfunctional as a camp, but it's very distinctive as a building with those multiple structures around it. This one, I think people identify with Fairbanks now. And when they first put it in, people were grumbling, you know, how are we going to heat it? It's going to have all kinds of problems with it. But it's the first thing they see when they start landing.
It's in a good position. You see it, whether you're coming by road or...
Right, right. And all the problems with having it anodized, you know, originally. So when the planes were landing, it could blind the pilots and all that testing that they had to do to come up with...
I miss those discussions.
Oh, it's amazing how much...
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think it's turned out to be a very, very good building, and it's what people think about now when they think about Fairbanks.
Working here before the building was renovated in early 2000s, you know, our biggest concern as staff in the building was always like, well, if you do these fancy designs of a building, you don't get as much box space.
Right.
You know, so we notably have a special exhibits gallery, which is basically a triangle. It's a little larger than a triangle now. We've been able to expand it recently, but it's a triangle and poses all sorts of obstacles when putting exhibits in there. And that's one way of thinking about it. And the other way of thinking about it, which I try to remind my crew whenever I can, is that, yes, but it's those obstacles that generate unique solutions and get you thinking creatively. This is why I was saying about, you know, me getting really good at using small amounts of space sometimes. And it's an important skill to be efficient and to be thinking in those ways. If you just get a monstrous, you know, 20,000 square foot rectangle, you might be mounting paintings the way they do in every other museum that has large rectangular galleries. But because our gallery has been made, it's unique. It makes you think about it in different ways. It makes you think about where you are and how this gallery can reflect that. So I think it's sometimes very beneficial to make that leap, to be architecturally creative, because internally, institutionally, you get creative in the same way.
You could answer a question for me, Roger.
Oh, no.
I gave credit sort of around the back way, because I never did stop and verify it particularly with anybody, but I gave credit to the museum for using the penalties of the COVID period creatively with the whale exhibit, the whale skeleton exhibit, because I thought it was a coup to set aside the space dedicated to the auditorium to make that into an assembly room for the skeleton. Was that
Yeah, it's less coup and more silver lining. Obviously, that project was well underway in early 2020. We knew what we needed to do. As Aaron will tell you, he needed to macerate all those large bones, and he ended up having no one to help him because he could only do it by himself come March of 2020. And so, not that great. But by the time we get late 2020, early 2021, we still have our auditorium closed. We can't do shows. So, oh, well, that's definitely going to be the space we build the Whale. And that's very positive. That's the coup you're talking about, right? We have this wonderful space. And for me, as a point of someone who was documenting that process, it meant I could have all my camera gear in there, set it up every day. It's also in the building, so I'm not traveling to go, like the bus was going off site, and I'm right there, make sure it's working, go back to work in the office, come back, and don't have to be there all the time. So wonderfully advantageous. At the same time, as soon as we do that, we kind of go, oh, every day, because the public can't see it. And wouldn't it have been nice? We would have solved it one way or the other. We would have been able to build the Whale one way or the other somewhere. And maybe then it could have been, the process could have been more visible by the public, which meant the documentary was very important to show that afterward. But that's why I say silver lining. It's like, yeah, the great thing is we could use the auditorium for something, but there would have been other ways to solve it, and we would have maybe been a little more public accessible. It was exciting. And every time we were able to bring small groups of people in there, stakeholders, people from the slope, especially to see the Whale in progress after they'd already worked with us for over a year on the project, was fantastic. And it was so much fun to show them the project. And we wish we could have done that with everyone, you know, that's coming through the building. And we had plans for that. Even though the amount of space we would have had would have been very cramped in that. But yeah, we're good. There's little complications, the big problems, such as COVID. Sometimes you find unique solutions to them which are advantageous in the end.
But it takes a lot of positive energy for everyone to keep grinding through everything that needs to be done. My goodness.
Well, that's why the importance of that investment, not just of funding, it's an investment so that when those opportunities come, you can take advantage of them. And if you're just keeping body and soul together, it's hard to reach out and take advantage of those other things.
Yeah, there's a lot of foresight involved in all institutions. What you need now, but also what do we sort of have to work out so that we have these opportunities a year from now, 2 years from now. If we get funding for planetarium, if we get funding for a new gallery, are we ready to take advantage of what that gives us? That's very important. And so then the Friends, as a partnering institution to the museum, gives us some of those opportunities, because a whole group of people who aren't on staff are putting their brains, their minds to these same problems and finding unique solutions that sometimes other people don't have time, the directors don't have time to think about, because he's worried about the day-to-day so often. Yeah.
Do you know offhand, is the planned new exhibit of the what do you call it, the Alaska Room or the interior?
The Gallery of Alaska?
Gallery of
the large
Alaska.
Gallery, yep.
Will Blue Babe continue to be a featured exhibit?
Yeah. In all, every design plan that we've worked on, he is made more of a feature. Blue Babe will be a feature in all our designs.
Well, the reason I ask is I've been going over a lot of the original literature, and I am continually impressed. Wow, Blue Babe was so important in changing minds of people who had a long way to go at the beginning of studies of the Ice Ages to understanding what role this part of the world played.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about objects in museums, is like Blue Babe, is that Blue Babe's important. It's a great object. What will change with a new exhibit is the story that gets told about Blue Babe, the complexity of the stories we can tell now, the information we know since Blue Babe went in, making different decisions about the interpretation. And that goes for all the objects. I mean, Otto at the entrance of the gallery, you know, and all our designs, we don't have Otto at the entrance anymore. Doesn't mean Otto's not present, doesn't mean he doesn't have a story to tell, but the story changes. And I think that's really beneficial, that we tell those new stories in the exhibits, but we also keep the old stories available. We have a history of different stories. And we've talked about this about a lot with Bus 142, and the idea that there's decades upon decades of stories associated with that object. And yes, sure, it's famous because of a single story. But when you look at it, there's a lot of stories there. And what you do is give this object a chance to breathe and continue to live and continue to tell those stories. And we learn those stories because the object is accessible.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
Yeah. So no fear about Blue Babe.
Good point.
You might be asking about other objects out there, and I say, no, that one's gone. But you haven't asked me about those. And by gone, meaning it's not an exhibit. It's still here at the museum. Still research being done on it. Thank you all for taking your time to be with us today.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
We appreciate you and all the work you do. Having to be on the front line thinking about those exhibits, boy, that's a lot of...
that's fun.
A lot of work.
Yeah. And it's fun to have watched you over the years develop into the different areas and...
Yeah, what's he going to do next?
When we first started working together.
Maybe next, what should I do next? Change. Right. I spent about 9-10 years in education, and it's been about that long in exhibits, so maybe I need to tackle something else.
And what would that be, pray tell?
Oh, managing their friends. Wrangling that. Yeah. No, it's a fantastic organization. It's a pleasure to be involved, and I'm having a pleasure talking to people of all dimensions in the museum about what they do and learning more about what the museum does just through this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, just the general piece of attracting and retaining people and having an institution that you're not treading water on. And I think that's one of the excitements about this museum, because you always have an influx of new information, new findings that's feeding into it and being positioned then to take advantage of those.
This is where I get in trouble. So. Email today from a researcher on campus saying, I just got this thing, blah, blah, blah. Would the museum be interested in exhibiting? I'm like, yes. But let me talk to people first before I just go. Yeah, respond, yes. Of course we are. We want to do all this. It's just a matter of figuring out how.
The only encyclopedic museum in the state, isn't it?
Is it? I avoid that word, but I'm going to take it as a compliment when you say that.
Well, I don't know that there's a lack of appetite for anything.
No, we always talk about exhibits as not being encyclopedias, not being websites, right? They are three-dimensional, immersive spaces. You have to move through them. The interpretation is nonlinear by nature. People are attracted to ideas, and they bounce around. And it's a very unique reading experience. And so... it also involves a lot of chance, a lot of luck.
Right.
What people will see, what they will miss, what might that might help their understanding, it might hinder their understanding in that space. But it's a fascinating project every time you work on it.
That's why it's interesting to go through a museum with a group or with kids, because they come out with totally different ideas of what they saw.
They saw, yeah. Absolutely.
And usually after you talk, then you go back and look.
It's an entirely different experience for anyone walking through a space. And if you walk through a space, as Tim has done innumerable times through the docent program, I won't maybe be as cliche as you learn something new every time.
But just about.
But you do.
Yeah. It's like, oh. And when we were always talking after a thing, oh, I didn't notice that was there, or I didn't see it as well, just doing the whaling docent program, and there wasn't I could not find a whaling harpoon other than the big cannon one that was there for a while, but what they actually use today. And it was like, and I finally found one, and it's there. And I'm not sure how long it's been there. I would say, oh, they finally put it in the
Yes, just for you, but... a couple decades ago. I'm not supposed to say that same thing happens to me, right? I go, oh, yeah, I never read that label. Well, I have. It's just been right. a long time and I've forgotten it.
Right. Or it takes a different resonance because you go, yeah. you know, I don't know exactly how it fits here, but just for whatever it's worth, at the school board's conference, we also had the Youth Leadership Institute. And so we had about 100 youth meeting at the same time and some meetings together, some conversations specifically together. But when you talk about museums are also 3D, one of the things that struck me is that students from different places in the state had a conversation with, they were emphasizing the importance of those personal connections, those relationships, not being videoed, teachers not being videoed, not the remote lessons, it's being in school. And I think that's what happens here when they come and they can see things and it's here. And there's actually, for a museum, a lot of touch opportunities, which is important. And for the students that then can think that, oh, there are other students working in labs who are taking, you know, really inside looks at the innards of animals, but really getting that hands-on. And I think that's what this is partially about.
Yeah, absolutely. You literally wander through a space. You can wander through the space. It's not like
and they want
taught this,
they
this,
want
this.
That hands-on.
Do you know anything about the fate of the Bechimo artifacts?
Bechimo artifacts? Yeah, I mean...
Have the Canadians...
Oh,
tried
no,
to lay claim?
I don't. That's a Josh question. That's an archaeological question. I don't know that. I know that Josh and I have had many conversations about that topic and objects on possible future exhibits. I don't know how that is influenced by, you know, negotiations of where the objects might...
I just thought, yeah. you know, this is a continuing mystery. What the heck ever happened to that ship after the artifacts came off?
We need to find it.
Yeah. Like the Erebus and the Terror. Franklin's ships.
It's out there.
They're out there. It's out there somewhere.
North is a big place.
Well,
I'll
people are looking.
The process.
They'll find it.
Yeah.
They'll find it. Technology will help it to happen.
And if I'm betting it's going to be in Alaska waters, on the Alaskan shelf.
Because you better start a pool.
Even if
it
we have
went back and forth so many times. It's a great mystery.
The next big thing. Oh, anyway, thank you, everyone.
Thank you to Run Anyway, Dave Norton, and Tim Doran, and all the friends of the UA Museum of the North. Keep spreading the word. The More You Look is a production of the UA Museum of the North on the campus of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the ancestral lands of the Dene people of the lower Tanana River. UAMN illuminates the natural history and cultural heritage of Alaska and the North through collections, research, education, and partnerships, and by creating a singular museum experience that honors diverse knowledge and respect for the land and its peoples. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe, share, and rate the program. This helps other listeners discover more about not only the work of this museum, but quite possibly other museums in their neighborhoods. The more you look, the more you find.